Welcome to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nigut. If you're listening to us in real time, it's Monday afternoon, and this is saying a lot, considering what we've gone through with the Trump administration. I can't remember a weekend with more intense political activity, both nationally and here
in Atlanta,
too. And we're going to talk about all that with, among others, Jim Galloway, the lead political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. I'm glad you're back. We missed you last week.
And it's good to be back. You know, I can only take so many of these vacations.
You read Jim on Wednesdays and Sundays in the Dead Tree paper, as I call it, and can also read his writing, and he oversees the Politically Georgia blog on the AJC.com, myajc.com, right?
Well, the Political Insider blog on Politically Georgia.
There's just too many brands. I can't get them all straight. Beth Shapiro, retired now. Just pointed out, Beth, that it's been 3 years coming up.
3 years. Time flies when you're working hard to get good people elected.
Beth worked for many particularly Democratic candidates as a pollster and a consultant. In addition to your work, you did corporate work.
And
as
a lot of nonprofit.
Pollster and nonprofit work as well. We're glad you're back with us
today.
Thanks for being here. Jackie Gingrich Cushman, you can read her columns on the, is it the?
On townhall.com.
Townhall.com. You had one, you just had a column last week called The Power of Hope.
No, I did. I talked about how important it is to believe you can actually make change in your life. And I think for those that are discouraged, and if actually you look at what happened with Obama, is that he promised hope and he didn't deliver on hope and change. And so we had a dip down in terms of what people thought could happen. And then what you see, that people are getting depressed and despaired. And you see Trump actually taking advantage of that and moving us into the next, you know, where we are today. So being discouraged is really a problem. And when you have hope and people can think there is a better future to look forward to, they actually can be very powerful.
So that's a message that we could also, I think a lot of people could say that's a message that applies today as they watch with despair what they think is happening with President Trump in the White House. But I'll leave all of that for all of you to talk about. And we're also joined today, and we had to scrape him off the ceiling to get him back into the studio, the happiest man in the room, University of Georgia Bulldog fan extraordinaire, Brian Robinson. You must be just floating.
Well, you were talking about all this political stuff going on over the weekend, and I was thinking, what are you talking about? It was just a football game. That's all that it was this weekend.
I want to remind people that Brian was appointed by his former boss, Governor Nathan Deal, to the Georgia World Congress Center Authority,
and he's promised all of us free tickets to the national championship.
Well,
awesome.
It was great. Well, that's what I was going to point out. In addition to the free tickets he's offered us. I thought you might want to give out your cell phone number to people out there who are looking for tickets to the national championship game, so they can call you directly day and night to try to get them.
Now, please, let's give them my home address so they can just come to the door. that would be better.
Well, congratulations to your Bulldogs.
Thank you.
I was up in Boston to see my daughter in a play at her school, but I did stay in the apartment on Saturday late afternoon to see what happened to the Bulldogs.
And I believe I got a text from you in the middle of the game,
yes,
actually. So it's nice to know that I was on your mind.
All right. Enough with the preliminaries. A lot of news to talk about. And in fact, there's a breaking story. The White House has just acknowledged that on Air Force One, President Trump, who made it clear over the weekend that he was, in fact, he tweeted out basically his support for Roy Moore in the Alabama Senate race. But we have now been told by the White House that he actually called Roy Moore from the plane, said, "I'm with you." And Jim, what presumably did he say
he
to
said,
Roy Moore?
Go get him, Roy.
Okay. Well, we want to start with the Alabama Senate race. And
8 days away.
Yeah. A week from Tuesday. What does it mean for him? Let me start with you, Galloway. What is, I think it was Jackie or... who was it who said, well, a lot of good it did Luther Strange.
One of those women, we all look alike.
Oh.
I plead guilty. Hour.
Was it you who said
yes,
that?
Yes, I said, yeah. Look,
all right, well, then you
ask,
go ahead.
Ask Luther Strange how much good that did him.
All right, but this is a different race, right? I mean, in other words, we're now talking a Republican against a Democrat.
This is true, and while as a Democrat I would love nothing more than for Doug Jones to win that race, I still see this as Alabama, and I still think the odds are that Moore wins this. I do think, though, that this story coming out this afternoon is part of the president's strategy to distract us, which he did last week with the video, the Islamic video. When the national story is such that he wants us to focus on something else, he comes out with distractions, whether it was tax cuts last week or the Flynn plea and the investigation this weekend. So I'm not surprised he did it. I'm not surprised by the timing.
Jim?
Well, you've got a CBS poll that's just out that says 71% of Republicans in Alabama, likely voters, think that all of these charges against Roy Moore, including laying hands on a 14-year-old girl some decades ago, all of it's made up by either the media or Democrats.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just easier to say that when you know the next question is going to be who you're going to vote for. To just go, oh, it's all lies, it's all partisan. I think it defies credulity to suggest that these stories are all made up. These women have nothing to gain. They're not suing him for monetary damages. There's nothing in it for them. In fact, the ones that I've heard from voted for Trump. They are Republicans. I think in another scenario, they may be Roy Moore voters. So I think it does not help Alabama Republicans to say this is all false. Just own up to it and say, look, we're Republicans. We don't. It's a closely divided Senate. We don't want to give Chuck Schumer another vote. And so for the next year, this is going to be our guy. We know he's not perfect. We know he's a little loony, but in essence,
you are striking a bargain here. You are striking a bargain for control of the Senate for the next 12 months, with the possibility of losing control of both houses in Congress.
I do want to throw something in, and then Jackie, I really want to get you into this conversation. But I want to make sure, Brian, because I don't think you really, you know, you're equating. You don't doubt the stories of these women.
No.
So when you say, yeah, I know, but then you went on to say, well, so there's something, he's a little wacky, he's a little this, a little that. He is significantly more than that if you believe those women and their stories are true. When you say it's okay for him to go into the United States Senate, if you believe those stories, you're saying a guy who is essentially molesting young teenage girls has a place in the United States Senate.
I thought Brian was doing was he was putting himself in the mind of an Alabama voter. I don't think Brian was speaking for himself.
Oh, thank you. I apologize. All right. Thank you.
I want to be on with her all the time.
Okay. I apologize. I apologize. I misunderstood that. I'm glad
that's
we
not
straightened
my thought.
That out.
You know, I think I do want to say this, though. I do think some people, they don't want to say this on the telephone with a stranger, but it is my hunch that many people would feel differently if this happened last year or 5 years ago. This whole 40 years ago thing doesn't make it okay. It doesn't make it all right. It's still creepy and weird and probably illegal. But I, as a Christian, and I think most of these Alabama Republicans are evangelical Christians, we do believe that you can repent and be forgiven and change. As Jackie said, the power of hope can change you.
Jackie, here's the statement that we got from Roy Moore. I'm honored to receive the support and endorsement of President Donald Trump. President Trump knows that the future of his conservative agenda in Congress hinges on this election. I look forward to fighting alongside the president to strengthen our military, secure our border, protect gun rights, defend the sanctity of life, and on and on. What's the downside of this for the Republican Party in a larger sense?
Oh, well, those are. Let's just break those apart. So the downside, I think, in the long term is exactly what I think Gally brought up earlier, is that the repercussions nationally. So I think you have to think about that from a party standpoint. I think a couple things happened. First of all, you had the Senate vote on the tax bill. It did go through early in the morning. But I do think that in people's minds reminds them that because it was so tight and so hard, that every party vote counts. Okay, that's a fact. I think secondarily, you have the poll that came out, the CBS poll that Jim mentioned. In that particular poll, Moore was actually ahead by 6 points. The margin of error was 3.8. That's among people that are apt to vote. If you look at actual registered voters, it's actually neck and neck. So at this point, you're looking at who can you actually get to make sure they get to the polls. And I think Trump looks at that, sees more than likely Roy's going to win, and wants to make sure that he endorses it. The last thing he wants is if Moore does win, is he doesn't want Moore in there with him not endorsing him, because then you got someone who got there without being endorsed by the president, and it's kind of a debacle. So I think you're kind of stuck with that as well. Additionally, if you look at that same poll that Jim mentioned, the CBS poll, Republicans that were going to vote for Moore, like you mentioned, 71%, you know, didn't believe the allegations, but 53% of those people are concerned about him, right? So they know that it's a problem. They're concerned about those particular allegations, but they think that other things matter more. I do think the timing of the tax bill and the passage in the Senate actually has a huge implication on this.
And I think the other thing to remember is that we're talking about a runoff, and turnout in runoffs tends to be lower than in the general election. We're talking in a few minutes about the Atlanta races tomorrow. And it really is about getting at your base.
Voters skew older.
Voters mm-hmm. skew older. In Alabama, they start out conservative and skew even more conservative. And it boils down to the suburbs of Birmingham and Montgomery and the areas where there are conservative Republicans, but who tend to be a little more toward the moderate side. And it just depends on how much they feel they don't want to be represented by Roy Moore in the U.S. Senate. Yeah.
But I do see kind of a with Trump's endorsement, I see a tactic emerging that has to be puzzling and maybe a little frightening to women all over the country, where all you say is no, it never happened. I mean, this is how Trump defended himself against allegations of groping and such last October, even in the face of the personal testimony and in the face of that the Hollywood Access tape. You have Brian. You had mentioned Christians believe in redemption. They do, but repentance has to be a part of it. Acknowledgement of guilt has to be a part of that, and that's something that Roy Moore hasn't done. And it's just shown the value of stonewalling.
So I think it's interesting that over the weekend on ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos, Alex Castellanos was on. He's a prominent Republican consultant. He's been doing work on behalf of the Republican Party for a very long time. And, you know, we hear Democrats talk impeachment with some regularity, and we very rarely bring it up on the show because it's, from my point of view right now, it's just we're way, way ahead of ourselves talking about it. But Castellanos said this weekend that he believes that Roy Moore could be the one, Brian, who caught, if he wins the Senate, creates such a backlash that in 2018, Democrats could take control of the House. And if that happens, Castellanos predicts that it will not take much to get an impeachment vote out.
You know, we'll see how much of a profile Roy Moore has in Washington. I think there'll be a lot of media interest in him because the mainstream media in Washington wants to get a high-profile person from the conservative side to look crazy. And so they're going to target him, ask him a lot of questions, try to get him on the record a lot. We'll see if he takes the bait, because if he wants to be in the news a lot, he can be, but it's going to be for negative reasons. He can also go the route that freshman senators should go, which is to keep a low profile, mm-hmm. don't do the Sunday shows, don't do those scrum interviews as you're walking back to your Senate office. He needs to keep a low profile for the sake of the party. Now, he's not someone who strikes me as being a team player for the party. He's a true believer ideologue, and he's going to fight for whatever he thinks. So, but I think how he acts will have a big determination on the outcome. If there's going to be a backlash to anything in the next election, it's not to a senator from Alabama. It is to the president of the United States. Everything is about Donald Trump. Everything.
But I think a lot of this is, to come back to Jim's point, it's fueling the tremendous upsurge in the number of women who have declared that they are running for office at all levels. We saw it here in the Atlanta elections. We're about to choose between two women for mayor tomorrow. The top three vote-getters were women. So I think that we're going to see, in Georgia alone, we'll see a lot more women running for the legislature, for local office. We've got two outstanding women running for governor of Georgia on the Democratic ticket. So I think that these kinds of cultural moments have impact, and the impact comes out in different ways. And I think one way we're going to see it is politically.
All right, let's move on to the other commotion that's the best word I can use. There was so much reaction over the weekend to the guilty plea entered by Michael Flynn. Jackie, one of the stories over the weekend that's gotten such an enormous amount of attention was a tweet that the president put out early on the weekend, it may have been Saturday morning, mm-hmm. In which he essentially said I had to fire Flynn because he lied to the vice president. Pence. He said that, of course, over and over mm-hmm. again, but then he went on. And he lied to the FBI. Now, this all you have to follow the timeline of all this, but the fact of the matter is he initially said I had to fire Flynn because of lying to Pence. And then it turns out that maybe he already knew about the FBI lie, and therefore when he had Jim Comey in his office and said that, Comey, can't you give this guy a break? That in of itself, there are many people saying, is an example of obstruction of justice.
Well, my understanding, and Jim, I'm sure you'll correct me if I'm wrong, is that subsequently Trump's personal lawyer, whose name I can't remember
John
right now.
John Dowd.
Thank you. Said that he actually composed the tweet. So for Trump, which, I mean, maybe he did, maybe, whatever.
First time ever.
I know.
First time ever.
Maybe that makes it even worse.
You'd think his attorney would know not to put that in writing.
Maybe that'll be his new, be a new screener, right? A new tweet screener. That could be a full-time job for somebody, is to scream the tweets before they went out yeah. for Trump. I think we have to see how everything falls out. I mean, I'm certainly no legal expert. I do think it's fascinating. If you look at the news story that came out this weekend was that in the investigation from the FBI, that one of the investigators who actually led the Hillary Clinton investigation on the emails, and again, my memory is not good for names. I'm sure someone can pull it up, probably Bill or Jim. But he was fired, and he was fired because he had anti-Trump messages, correct. But he also led the Hillary email investigation, which does lend one to wonder, was the same process followed? Additionally to that, there is the question about whether or not the whole Loretta Lynch and Bill Clinton, the concern about whether they met and whether there's anything besides talking about grandchildren, which one would wonder whether or not there was, whether that investigation was really about what happened in that conversation or whether that investigation was really about who leaked it to the public. So I think we have a lot of things actually happening, and there's not really enough information that's being disclosed to the public to actually see it all right now.
Well, I think the main thing happening right now is the Robert Mueller investigation and Clinton's and all the other stories that go back prior to the election. I don't think are as important as what this independent counsel is doing in terms of the investigation that's going on now.
The reassignment of the special counsel, the lawyers who were working on the Clinton case and started working too on the Russia collusion case, it does give ammunition, as you can hear, and it's legitimate ammunition.
But then Mueller acted when he realized.
Oh, absolutely! This happened in July. It happened in July. But the point is, it is worth our mentioning within the context of larger matters. But it is also true, Jim, that this tweet, whether it was his attorney or Trump himself, does seem to suggest some additional legal jeopardy, perhaps, for the president.
Well, if that's what your lawyer says that the client knew at the time that the firing happened, okay. Yeah, that's entirely problematic, and I see Mr. Robinson across the table from me rolling his eyes, and he's saying, "Botched staff work again."
Yeah, I mean,
what do you mean botched staff work? This Twitter account is in the president's name. The White House has said, Brian, that yes, you can consider tweets that come from this account to be official Trump White House communications. So what's the difference?
Well, let me first say that my eye roll was was because this is a pattern of the Twitter account being a problem that creates bigger problems. As Beth mentioned earlier, it is used as a weapon, a tool at times to change the conversation, to insert something into the news cycle as a distraction. And sometimes I think he does it brilliantly, Beth. I think sometimes it's a brilliant strategy. At other times, he does things that create bigger problems than what he's distracting from. I do wish that there was a screener. I do wish that this lawyer had actually been involved. I don't believe that story. I think any good lawyer would have gone, no.
Well, let me update.
Are you volunteering for the job? Because I mean, that's something we could put you up for. Are you interested?
I think Stephen Fontasatino has that already.
Let me update you on this story.
Marco Fefe.
Because I think it gets even more interesting this morning, and we have to get a break in. But before we do, the story got more interesting this morning when John Dowd, the attorney who is now taking responsibility for the tweet, gave an interview in which he said this, Beth: the president cannot obstruct justice because he's the chief law enforcement officer under the Constitution's Article 2 and has every right to express his views of any case. The new argument being proposed by the Trump attorneys apparently is, well, it may look like obstruction, but since the president is the chief law enforcement officer, there's no way he can obstruct justice. That's the line as of about 9 o'clock this morning.
Why does Richard Nixon's name?
Well, it's true.
That
in fact was the first article of impeachment against President Nixon, that he obstructed justice.
Back to the Future, 1974.
We have a White House that believes in alternative facts, and if they want to provide us with an alternative fact like this, that's fine. It doesn't really comport with our history that was sort of recent to some of us.
All right,
I was alarmed when I saw that this morning, Bill, because it is not the argument that you want to be making.
No, and it suggests they're giving ground.
They're giving ground. So I was concerned when I saw that because obviously you got to think the President of the United States has got a top-notch legal team around him of big brains who have been through many tough scenarios. And even the lawyers I work with locally, they're so cautious. I mean, they just it's hard to get them to act because they are so risk averse. So to see them taking such a step out there was disconcerting.
Yeah, that's a last ditch argument.
That's a last ditch argument, which is worrying.
Well, it also raises much larger questions about the future of the republic, in the sense that if you make this argument now that a president is entirely above all law, what does that mean for history? Jackie, there's one thing that before we get to this break, we do need to point out: there is legal debate over whether or not a president of the United States can in fact be indicted for obstruction of justice. But the Dowd argument is he can't even be accused of it because as chief law enforcement officer, he can do anything he wants in a case.
Well, I think to your point, obviously that you can't have that he can do anything he wants because that is against the framework of how our country was founded. But if you look at the actual, the details of how it's going to fall out, I think what we're going to see is we're going to have more than enough time and more than enough weeks and months coming ahead to talk about the various legal issues because they are going to continue to come up.
Forever. Mm-hmm. This case is not going to be over, as the president's people have been saying, New Year's Eve.
No, another thing you could say is, you know, at what point does it, and you have to look now probably out 6 to 12 months, but at what point after he has a success on the tax break, et cetera, does he at some point decide, you know what, I think I'll just, you know, I can go play somewhere else. He's already given away his salary. He's won the election. At what point can he, you know, because he can decide it's not worth it.
All right. We got to get out of here. We've taken a lot longer than we should have to get to a break, but there was so much good stuff to talk about. And still ahead, the voters go to the polls in Atlanta tomorrow, and let's catch up on where the panel thinks that race stands. You're listening to Political Rewind.
You've counted on GPB throughout 2017 to bring you insights into important issues and events, and you'll continue to rely on GPB in the new year. Listener support makes all of the coverage you hear possible. As you take time to support the organizations that are important to you at this time of year, please include GPB on your list. Go to gpb.org and click donate to make your tax-deductible year-end gift. And thank you.
We're back with Beth Shapiro, Jackie Cushman, Brian Robinson, and Jim Galloway. Jim, big day tomorrow. We're going to see voters go to the polls to elect either Mary Norwood or Keisha Lance Bottoms as the next mayor of Atlanta. And so as we reach today, now it's all about turnout, isn't it?
It's all about turnout. It's all about working your base. And working the geography that you're dependent on, okay? Mary Norwood is from Buckhead. She's going to depend on North Atlanta. Keisha Lance Bottoms is a district council person for Southwest Atlanta. In between them is Midtown. And I think it was very telling that Bottoms had a rally on Sunday evening in near Piedmont Park with Kamala Harris, yeah. The senator from California.
Who many people are touting as a potential candidate for president in 2020.
Exactly. I mean, because I think whoever wins Midtown wins this runoff.
It's more than Midtown. It's definitely
East Atlanta as a whole.
It's Midtown and East Atlanta. It's the northeast neighborhoods of Morningside, Virginia Highland, all the way south through East Atlanta, Candler Park, Kirkwood, and then over to Grant Park, Ormond Park. So if you look at the map that the AJC so thoughtfully produced the day after the election, it's the third of the city or the quarter of the city that where Kathy Woolard won those council districts.
So you've got Kamala Harris in town and Cory Booker came in, another person who's being touted as a potential Democratic presidential candidate, senator currently from New Jersey. How important are people like Booker and Harris coming in to rally voters, do you think, Jackie?
I think an election like this, so this is a local election that's determined the next mayor. You had our current mayor, Mayor Reed, who went in and endorsed Keisha Lance Bottoms. And now, you see Keisha Lance Bottoms trying to turn it into a party-affiliated race. And I actually think for Mary Norwood to have the backing now of Kathy Woolard and Peter is much more important than to have people from out of state come in. I think it doesn't mean as much. It's a local election. We're focused on who's here and who's done a lot of work. As you said earlier, I think Kathy Woolard pulls a lot of weight in that area. I think having her endorse Mary Norwood is fantastic for Mary.
And I think even more important is Shirley Franklin.
And thank you for that. Absolutely. Having Shirley Franklin, because remember she was here last time I was here, and she said she wasn't going to endorse anybody.
That's what she said.
She did, and then she endorsed somebody. So she must have really felt very strongly to have taken that next step and endorsed Mary Norwood.
Two things on that. One, I agree Shirley Franklin is huge. Two, Kathy Woolard is huge for East Atlanta and Midtown and the LGBT community, and I encourage people to look at the great piece by Greg Bluestein in yesterday's AJC about the power of the gay vote in the city and how it's grown and matured as an electorate. What Shirley Franklin does is signal to older African-American female voters that it's okay to be with a white candidate. She has made it. She has given them cover with their friends and in their neighborhood to vote for someone who doesn't look like
yes,
them.
And because we know that one of the strengths Bottoms was drawing on was African American women. So Jim,
right. The other thing I would say is it's interesting because the same tactic used against Norwood in 2009 is being used against her this year. That is, she's a closet Republican, and the attacks are coming from the state Democratic Party. But these 8 years, you know, it's Kasim Reed is backing Bottoms right now, but what's interesting is Kasim Reed is responsible for really changing the climate that has rendered these attacks on Norwood a little bit less effective than they were 8 years ago, because it's hard to argue that this person is a Republican and so dangerous to City Hall when you've established this wonderful relationship with Nathan Deal, When Chris Riley, his chief of staff, has donated to Keisha Lance Bottoms, and that's a little bit news
wow.
there. Yeah,
wow.
yeah, and of course when you one of your primary workhorses in City Hall, at least in legal affairs, is Robert Highsmith, Republican.
In other words, and you're pointing to something I was going to ask you about, Beth. I was struck by two things that I saw emerge over the weekend. One, we're never hidden this, you were a very, very strong supporter and did what you could to help Kathy Woolard become mayor. I was struck by two things. One was a really wonderful, fascinating, I should say, photograph of a war room with Mary Norwood, Caesar Mitchell, Peter Amon, and Kathy Woolard all sitting together, presumably strategizing about get out the vote efforts. That's a really fascinating picture. It really tells you something about the coming together of these former candidates. Now, the Bottoms people dismiss it as folks who are just, haters of Kasim Reed. But it was a powerful picture
about... But that's kind of the point.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's why I brought it up. But the other thing that I'd ask you to comment on in addition is, by bringing in Cory Booker and Kamala Harris... You are telling people in the Bottoms campaign, this is all about electing a Democrat, period. In other words, that's the big deal here, elect a Democrat. I'm not sure that's a strong enough argument.
And I would agree. I am a Democrat. I was born with that defective gene. I'll die with that defective gene. But in this case, I wish the Democratic Party were saving its money for the race for governor next year, because I don't think it's an effective argument in this case, because Mary Norwood is a known quantity. If she were some business person who just stepped out there and nobody knew who she was, then I could see where you could try to make that case. And yes, it's true. Her campaign consulting team is full of people who are Republican consultants and operatives and people like that. But she also has Democrats on her campaign team, and she is known throughout the city. She also, I think, a lot of what has Democrats upset about Republicans is that on a variety of cultural and social issues, we have problems with them. In Mary's case, you talked about the LGBT article. She's enjoyed strong support from LGBT voters over the years. And so there's a credibility gap. If you're talking to an LGBT voter and saying, oh, Mary's a Republican, don't vote for her, it's like, well, no, she's been good on issues that are important to me. So I expect Senator Booker and Senator Harris to be here because they're running for president and they want to be on the side of the person that they think will be the next mayor of Atlanta, because we're an important collection of votes in a national race. But I think that this Mary Norwood is a closet Republican charges are just they're ringing hollow, and I base that just on comments from my friends, from my Democratic friends, and posts on Facebook who are going, that's not the Mary that we know.
Yeah, you tend to pay less attention to polls as we get this close to the end of the race, and more attention to kind of the closing arguments that candidates make. And of course, Keisha Lance Bottoms made her closing arguments with two U.S. senators. Mary Norwood late yesterday announced the two leaders of her transition team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
one of them's Peter Amon and
Tamanika Youngblood.
Thank you. I was going to require some help with that first
yes.
name, who's very big in the communities movement in Atlanta and historic preservation. And both are intended just to kind of send signals that she doesn't intend a race-based cleaning of house in City Hall, I think, to give people a better comfort level.
Yeah, I think it's very smart of Mary Norwood. She's run a very good campaign. She's an incredibly hard worker. And I do think to see all the candidates that didn't make the runoff come and endorse her, and you have Bottoms have to go out of state to get someone to come in and talk about how great she is, I think it sends a clear signal. I think secondarily, and interestingly enough, and you're right, normally runoffs have a lower turnout, but our last runoff, when we had the runoff between Kasim Reed and Mary Norwood, it actually went up by 8%, the voting did. So it'll be interesting to see. I think voting will go up again this time because people are very involved.
Yeah. And by the way, Kwanzaa Hall did endorse Ms. Bottoms.
Yes. Thank you.
Right. I want to say one thing that Mary has not run as a conservative, and that's why it really matters. You know, these local races branch out from these ideological divides that impact Washington and to some degree the Gold Dome, where you have these partisan differences. Mary Norwood is running as a progressive. I mean, you're not seeing Keisha Lance Bottoms stake out territory to the left of Mary Norwood on any particular issue. She is sending signals to progressives in the city that she's in line with them on many of the issues that matter. What she hasn't done is gone out and bash Republicans or bash Trump or Trump voters, because she needs those. That's part of her coalition. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's kept her sort of in the center to some degree, because she's not going to go out there and bash Trump. But that's the only divide that I've seen in messaging between the two.
Beth, you get the last word before our break.
I think that what it's going to boil down to tomorrow is that you have Councilmember Bottoms, who, if elected, it's more the opposite of the being elected. If not elected, would mean that for the first time in 40 years, we would not have a black mayor of Atlanta. And for many voters, black and white, that's important to them. And so I think that a lot of her support is coming from people who feel that we're the cradle of the civil rights movement. We have provided leadership, or black leaders have provided leadership for these past four decades, and we want to see that continued. For Mary Norwood, if those voters predominate, then I think Councilmember Bottoms wins. For Councilmember Norwood to win, then that says that a person who has represented the entire city for a number of years, who has I think more of a multiracial coalition, and someone who has been rejected by and who rejects the policies of Mayor Reed, if the majority of voters are there, then I think that Councilmember Norwood wins.
Nicely summed up. I'm glad you took the last word in the segment.
You're welcome.
Beth Shapiro. Let's get our final break of the show out of the way. When we come back, a very important Supreme Court case will be heard tomorrow. We'll talk about that. We'll talk a little bit about the tax reform bill, too. This is Political Rewind.
On the next Fresh Air, Daniel Ellsberg, best known for leaking the classified Pentagon Papers. But back then, the former military analyst had other documents he wanted to leak. In his new book, The Doomsday Machine, he writes about our government's nuclear capabilities. The documents he once copied and hid have been released through the Freedom of Information Act. Join us.
Fresh Air is at 3 o'clock this afternoon here on GPB.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nygut. I have Jim Galloway, Beth Shapiro, Jackie Gingrich Cushman, and Brian Robinson with me in the studio today. I think it's been about 3 years, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, since the Colorado baker, Jack Phillips, refused to bake a wedding cake for a gay couple who came to him and asked him to do it. They had a very, very brief exchange from all accounts of this. They walked into a shop. They said, "We're looking for a wedding cake." He encouraged them to choose some other kind of cake that he said he'd be happy to make for them, but it was against his religious principles. He didn't believe in gay marriage. This is before gay marriage became the law of the land. Not that that probably would have had any impact on what Phillips did. And tomorrow, that case will be heard by the United States Supreme Court as they look at religious liberty and religious tolerance. Jim Galloway, it truly has the potential, depending on how much the court does in its ruling on this, to be a monumental court.
Right, and this is where we're going to see the impact of Neil Gorsuch and his appointment to the court earlier this year. I think this is one of those fundamental cases that, in hindsight, kind of looks a whole lot like what the South went through in the 1960s, as far as public accommodation does, but it's not color based. It's belief based, and that makes it a good bit harder to gather right from wrong.
Except that it was beliefs and far too many cases, religious beliefs that fuel discrimination against black people.
Oh, absolutely. Right.
So it is belief-based, and it's discrimination against somebody based on an inherent characteristic. And I think you're exactly right to point back to the South and what we went through 50 years ago, because we decided then that as a country, we're not going to discriminate against people based on who they are. And while some frame this as religious liberty, others look at this as discrimination, pure and simple, in public accommodations.
I think that this makes me think of a Supreme Court justice in the past who said that tough cases make for bad law. And I think this is a tough case where you can really see the viewpoints of both of these sides. Because this particular baker wasn't saying, I won't do business with you. You can't get out of my store. It is much more nuanced and conflicted than that. Where I am pleased to see, though, and I think this is where this has tremendous implications for Georgia, is that this could take the RFRA, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, off of the table in state politics. It's very divisive here. In a Republican primary, it's about a 65-35 issue in favor of such a law. And, of course, the business community is very opposed mm-hmm. to it. You have companies saying, we won't come here if you enact this. Governor Deal, in a very high-profile way, vetoed this kind of legislation. So one thing I hope to see come out of this is that this issue gets taken out of our politics mm-hmm. and decided on national level.
Well, unfortunately, it's probably not going to be.
It depends on how it gets ruled on. Yeah. Plus, well, it won't be out before right. your primary anyway. Yeah.
But it is a very, I mean, I think you've got a good point. It's a very interesting case because it wasn't about they wouldn't transact. It's not like they wouldn't sell them a cupcake or right. a piece right. of cake or something else. It's that they weren't going to actually construct the wedding cake for them.
He wouldn't give them his best work.
Right, and so it's a really, but if they wanted a birthday cake, they would have sold them a birthday cake.
Yeah.
So I think it's a much more nuanced kind of argument than we're used to, and it does make you wonder. I mean, the alternate is, you know, if they can go to the baker next door and get a better cake, and in fact, there should be businesses that are probably, as there are here in Atlanta, businesses that are actually saying, we'd love to have people, LGBT community, come here, and businesses are actually doing well with that.
But that's all well and good for Atlanta. Suppose you live in Cordele or Vidalia or some small town, and there's just one baker. And so we're assuming that because there might be options, it's okay to discriminate because you can go elsewhere.
But the thing is, he wouldn't sell them, but he didn't want to do. He wasn't discriminating about not selling him anything. It was they didn't want to produce a work of art. So the way it's phrased is, it's actually using his creative work of art,
yes,
making something that's different.
But let's say,
as opposed to a plain product.
I'm sorry. I just want to tell you. Let's tell our listeners where this case stands as it's handed to the Supreme Court of the United States. First of all, the baker lost when he went to the Civil Rights Commission, or when the couple went to the Civil Rights Commission, they ruled against the baker and said he ought to bake the cake. It went up to the Colorado Appellate Court, and here's what they said. It is unlikely that the public would view Masterpieces, that's the name of his bakery, creation of a cake for a same-sex wedding celebration, as an endorsement of that conduct. Rather, we conclude that a reasonable observer would understand that Masterpiece's compliance with the law is not a reflection of its own beliefs, suggesting, Jim, that the baker may very well not like the notion of gay marriage, but that to bake a gay wedding cake would in no way have an impact of him in the
community.
And this is
where, if it's decided on mm-hmm. Religious freedom rather than free speech,
right.
this is where we have the problem, because if I am a hairstylist, I can say I put as much artistic effort in somebody's head of hair, if they have one, not like me, as somebody does in a cake. The same thing for, I suppose, even lawyers or even public relations specialists can say that what I do.
I'm very much an artist. I'm glad you brought that up.
And you have spun some masterpieces.
We can tell by your hair.
All right.
but in all seriousness, viewpoints are important in my business. I would have to tell some clients I can't take on this communications effort because I work in Republican politics and it'll get me mixed up with these people. Viewpoints do come into play, and I do have to discriminate, quote unquote, based on those viewpoints.
Yeah, and again, this is a baker who also won't do anything. He would not do anything with offensive messages or cakes to celebrate Halloween.
Yeah. So we're saying
he's very,
it's a,
right. he's very concerned.
Well, what he wants is to hang a sign that says "Wedding cakes for heterosexuals only."
Yeah.
Is what he's saying.
That's essentially all right, and that's what the cake. That will be a fascinating. It'll be really interesting to hear the arguments, Brian. I want to give you 1 minute before we go on. We're going to talk briefly about the tax bill, but you asked for a moment because you had a very special little conversation over the weekend. Were you at the governor's mansion?
No,
this, no,
this is with a friend of the family. Oh, I want to give a shout out to one of our youngest listeners, second grader Delia from Covington, who commutes to Alpharetta to charter school.
Oh,
so she's got a long commute, but she uses her time wisely to learn about Georgia politics, listening to Political Rewind, and she loves it when she hears Quinn's dad. That's how she knows me.
Delia?
Delia.
Delia, we are glad you are listening.
Great Johnny Cash name.
All right.
Now do your homework.
I just wanted to make sure we got that in before we ran out of time. All right, let's talk tax reform. The Senate, you know, I got to say, Jim, this is one of those things. I'm listening today. I'm flipping around the channels in my office, and Andrea Mitchell comes on MSNBC, and the headline is that she reads is, in the dead of night, the Senate passes a tax bill. Now, that, in fact, is when they did pass it. But it isn't as if they hid what they were trying to do all
along. No, I think, but the finished bill, I think, went to Democrats 25 minutes before the vote.
Yes.
And it was some 400 pages long.
Yeah. Yeah.
So with at least one or two parts that were handwritten.
Okay, so I want to get into two things about this quickly before we run out of time. One, within the last hour, right before we went on the air, we learned that the Freedom Caucus, which is obviously a very influential group of members of the House, and they've had the power to sabotage bills over the years that they've been together. The Freedom Caucus, tonight, we are expecting, now that the Senate and the House have each passed their own versions of the bill, the House is going to have to vote whether to take this bill to a reconciliation process, a conference committee to iron out the differences, and they have to vote to do that. We're hearing the Freedom Caucus has some significant problems with probably the deficit that it would, I would think. And they're also upset because they don't like the fact that Republicans are pushing to allow the government to keep on spending money just for another 2 weeks. We reached that deadline on Friday, and they're saying we're not going to go for a short-term fix. It'll be surprising if they're willing to sabotage the whole thing, but it's going to be something to watch.
It's a high-wire act. I think the last huge tax bill passed during the George W. Bush era took 6 months to negotiate. They're trying to do this in something like 6 weeks. And on the Senate side, I think, didn't you tell me that we've got Susan Collins of Maine saying that she wants the medical expense deductions
doubled
before she can vote for it? And quite frankly, I'm hearing from my relatives wondering, you know, we've got mom in the nursing home. Are we going to be able to write those costs off?
So Jackie and Brian, as Republicans, let me, Jackie, get you for it seems pretty clear that Republicans are driving to get something done so they can show some legislative achievement. Is this all just those of us in the media ratcheting up the drama around it? They're going to pass this thing, aren't they?
I think they've got to pass it. I mean, I think they all realize that if they don't pass something before they go home for Christmas, they're going to be in big trouble. All of the House is up for election next year, a third of the Senate's up. They've got to go home and claim victory for something. The stock market is assuming that they're going to do something and it's going to be good. I think if they don't have a major victory, that they're going to be in really big trouble. And again, I think that's part of why you see with the narrow victory in the Senate that you see Moore doing well in Alabama and Trump endorsing him. But again, they've got to get something done.
Brian, one of the things that was interesting is that Johnny Isaacson had put in a little provision that was going to protect Delta Airlines from its competition with the airlines from the Middle Eastern countries. It got dropped before the Senate bill was passed. That's not good news for Johnny Isaacson and his power in this process, or for Delta Airlines. It might be good for customers looking for cheaper fares. I don't know.
Well, if I could steal that one from you, Brian. Often if you really need somebody's vote, you'll take something away that they want. You know, it's part of the this is part of the horse trading.
We see he voted for the bill.
Yeah, he voted for the bill, and you know, there's always the hope and the prayer that he's on the that he's in conference committee. It'll be restored. I would say that issue has another ally in the husband of the new U.S. ambassador to the Vatican.
There you go.
He has
Ooh, well done.
He has. Mr. Gingrich has weighed in, and he said he wants Delta protected.
You know, by the way,
it's
after
he's flying back and forth from Rome,
Beth, I wanted you to know that after we all get free tickets to go see the championship game from Bryant, Jackie has promised to get us all private audiences with the Pope. Now that her dad has got a connection to the Vatican. All right, we're just about out of time, and just first of all, thank you all for a really good show today. There's way more than we could get to today. I do want to mention one other thing very quickly. Tom Faust pointed this out to me. On Friday, we did mention the Brian Ross report for ABC News, in which Ross said incorrectly that it was President Trump who had encouraged Flynn to communicate with the Russians during the campaign, and that was the key. Ross got that wrong. It was during the transition. It may be a subtle distinction, but it is important because as a president-elect, his potential to have those kinds of communications are much less suspect than if they're happening during the campaign. We mentioned that as we updated a lot of things on the show. And Brian Ross has now been suspended for at least a month by ABC News. So our apologies for passing that on, but we were responding to what was being reported by any number of news organizations. So that's it for us today. Brian Robinson, thank you for being here.
Always
enjoyed
pleasure.
Having you here. Jackie Cushman, thank you. Beth Shapiro. Jim Galloway, again, it's so good to have you back here for Political
Great
Rewind.
Great to be here.
We'll be back on Wednesday at 2 o'clock when, among other things, we'll wrap up what happened in the Atlanta mayor's race. One of our panelists will be Mark Roundtree of Landmark Communications, who conducted that final poll for your news organization, Jim, in which he gave Mary Norwood that 6-point lead. We'll be able on Wednesday to either congratulate him or tell him here's another bad poll. We'll see how that turns out. All right, that's it for us. Tom Faust, thank you for your work on the show today. Tyler Morris, thanks for running that board, for engineering the show. I'm Bill Nygut. We'll see you again on Wednesday at 2 o'clock. Take care.